From the Climate Crisis Film Festival in Vancouver, February 24, 2007, this is Dr. Colin Campbell, Science Advisor to the Sierra Club of British Columbia.
Well, thank you, everybody, and thank you very much to my colleagues in this local branch of the Sierra Club. They do terrific work. We don't always see a lot of them from Victoria, but I hear it's been a great success. Now, we have experts here today on political and the scientific aspects of climate change, and although the Sierra Club works in both those areas, I'd like to take a slightly different tack. I think we've all probably here got a fair idea now what some of the scientific and factual issues are around climate change. Like, we know, for instance, that if we're going to stabilize our atmosphere at something like its present greenhouse gas concentrations, then we really can't afford to emit any more than the Earth can take up. And right now, if we were equal about it, a little more than half a ton per person, whereas we produce about 4.5 tons of carbon, greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, and others. So that implies that we have to reduce our production of greenhouse gases by about 85% just to stabilize where we are now. And if we wanted to go the extra step and be relatively sure that we weren't going to exceed a 2-degree overall heating of the Earth, we'd have to remove about 30 parts per million equivalent of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And just in actual mass, that's equal to about 8 years of production at 2005 levels. So I don't think any of us are in any doubt anymore that we're facing something massive. And rather than go into any more of those kind of details, I think, like myself, I'm sure many of you have had this sinking feeling in your stomach lately that somehow or another this thing is big and we've unleashed a bit more than we can retrieve. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because I think managing our own worry is going to be as difficult as managing the actual issues that are before us. So for me, the way I do that, it's got a lot to do with the way I perceive the planet and the fact that I'm alive on this place with all those other things that are alive. And I was trained as a paleontologist back in the 60s and 70s. And you won't be surprised to know that paleontologists, more than any other profession, have time travel fantasies. You know, it's like we end up being with deep familiarity with geological and fossil evidence. And we all think that, you know, we just yearn for that personal privilege of going to the past in real time and having a look at it. Well, of course, it doesn't happen really, but I have to say that more and more, I'm seeing an uncanny resemblance of what's going on day by day right now to how I imagine things would look if I was doing time travel. Processes and events that would normally take millions of years or thousands or even millions of years to unfold are literally happening in the dimension of human lifetimes. So it's a peculiar time for a paleontologist. I have to admit to being vaguely excited, but on the other hand, terribly worried about how this is coming out. Having a strong and affectionate relationship with the planet and life, I think, is important. And one way I've come at it is by remembering, and I'm going to just list for you, a short sequence of things that made the Earth the way it is, things that had to happen for this to happen. And the very first one was this fortuitous collision between two bodies that spun off the Moon and the Earth. The Earth grabbed the core. The Moon ended up being quite large but light. So here we are with a small planet, a big core, lots of radioactivity inside to keep it warm and stirring over, and a Moon just the right size to make the kind of tides that we need in an ocean that wouldn't be there if we weren't just the right distance from the Sun. So you can see it's the probabilities are starting to look short, but they do add up. Very early after the emergence of the Earth, in less than a billion years, there's life. Simple life, microbial, bacterial life. And the Sun, being the way it is, relatively constant, we're able to get the atmosphere transformed from a fairly poisonous reducing atmosphere to this highly energized oxidizing atmosphere with oxygen. 2 billion years for that to happen. And really, this kind of life that we are couldn't have happened without that. And also, just a little more arcane perhaps, but interesting, is the phenomenon of plate tectonics and continental drift. This internal turnover of the hot interior of the Earth creates continents, creates mountains. exposes minerals which react with carbon dioxide that's constantly being coming in from volcanoes. So this thing manages the global atmosphere and the global temperature on the long time scale. And then, of course, there's life itself that manages the atmosphere on a shorter time scale. And also this magnetic phenomenon of moving metallic contents in the middle of the Earth gives us a magnetic field that protects us from the worst of the sun's incoming radiation. So, you know, it's an unusual place. I mean, it's an amazing place. It's not very big. We've all seen, you've seen the Gore movie, you've seen the one pixel view of Earth from a long way out, and all of this has happened here. I also just like to note to you, and this, then I'll finish with this little encapsulated Earth history. It can't last forever. The sun gets hotter. The greenhouse effect that actually gives us the warmth we need has to get less and less effective as time goes by. And somewhere in the future, in a little bit more than 500 million years, we're down to 150 parts per million of carbon dioxide, and photosynthesis won't work. So there's a natural terminus to the suitability of this planet for life. And it's got about a 12 billion year lifetime, and I want to reassure you that we're in the best billion years of the Earth's history. So there's this cascade of improbable events that puts us where we are now. But more than that, where we are now is that we've become responsible. Like, we're the guardians of this great process. It's clear that our impact is geological in its scope, and we have to look after the inorganic and the organic processes and those other species who are in our thrall of activity. So here we are. We have to do this. We have to become the caretakers. And I think we need to do this with a couple of things in mind. One, a certain amount of gratitude, because these experiences are rare in the universe. And the other one is creativity, because our creativity and our ability to work together is going to be called upon like never before. So at a personal level, what I suggest is get out your camera, get out your binoculars, get into the world, learn a place deeply, and maybe choose a group of organisms and learn them deeply. I think without that, without taking that time to be present to what this thing actually is, the scope and the worry and the intensity of what we have to achieve in our lifetimes and for the next several generations could be just too depressing to manage. And I think I don't really know what else to suggest. I'm interested in this discussion. This is my first attempt to deal with the fact that managing ourselves is as big a deal as managing everything else. So thank you for your time, and I look forward to your questions.
From the Climate Crisis Film Festival in Vancouver, February 24, 2007, that was Dr. Colin Campbell, Science Advisor to the Sierra Club of British Columbia. The festival was a joint presentation by Vancouver Public Library and the Sierra Club of BC, recorded by Radio EcoShock.